this is Pirate RC, and I'm out here at the Brass Royal in Hillcrest, San Diego, California. Just saw Dropjoy perform. How's it going, you guys?
Good.
Good, man. How are you?
Good.
Thanks for coming out.
Can you introduce yourselves really quick so everyone knows who's each voice, basically?
Nikki, Brooklyn, New York, lead singer.
Andy, drummer.
E-Train, bassist.
A glimpse of what your live set's like. Well, I got a whole live set, I guess. Really is more accurate, right?
You got a bunch of new songs now.
So a bunch of new
brand
songs.
Brand new songs.
But you guys definitely do have an energy when you're performing. And I've noticed, one thing I noticed, I don't know if you guys find this, is the bass and guitar parts. You kind of play a bass like a guitar in a way. And you kind of play a guitar like a bass in a way. So did you guys start out in other bands playing?
Oh, no, they're on to us!
She has bass envy and I have guitar envy.
Perfect.
That's probably fair.
No, I think that with the three-piece, she gives me a lot more room on the bass. And there's a lot of bassy notes in Nick's guitars. And it helps me a lot to just play a lot of notes. And they've never told me to shut the fuck up, so... Oh, you guys did that one time.
Happy, doesn't listen, man.
Yeah, that was actually the lyrics, right?
Yeah, that was
like, oh, I thought you were just singing to the crowd. No.
Maybe you guys are singing key.
But it's cool. I mean, there's definitely a vibe between the two of you, I think, and in your playing and stuff. It's not like you're stepping on each other. You're just definitely playing together.
In sync with one another. Absolutely. I have played in... I know that he's a bassist primarily, but he also plays guitar. I also, as a guitar player, play bass. So that's probably where all of the things overlap.
And I don't like strings at all.
So you just stick with the drum. So you got a solo tonight, which actually I've noticed... In a lot of local bands, the drummers don't get a solo too often, and actually there's not a lot going on instrumentally, which I noticed with you guys, you jam a bit in the song. So do you enjoy the solo? Is that something you look forward to?
Yeah, it's kind of involves every time we play it. It's a different song, a different tempo sometimes. The song is called Fog. It's been around for... since Dirt, but it's the solo's cool. It comes around every time differently. So.
I think to me as a three piece, I think it's just important that everybody get to showcase. Everybody should have their moment in the light or the sun or whatever that is. And especially as a guitar player, it's easy for me to step out and have a million solos, but I think that's kind of boring. So to hear everybody is kind of like, oh.
Well, to have all three people capable of that, too, is great, right?
It's amazing.
So how'd you guys go for being a three-piece versus adding a keyboard player or something, or adding another guitar?
I think, if I can answer this, we talked about it, and Etienne said, so, Nicole, how about another guitarist? And I remember saying, well, if we add a person, he will fade into the backs. And I think he said, well, okay, well, we'll say it's three people. I think that's how that happened.
That's our second guitarist that carries me.
One note, though. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous, though.
I think when I joined the band about, the band formed about 3 years ago, but Andrew and Nick share a long history, very long history. And when I'll never forget the audition that I had. I've been to many auditions before I came to Dropjoy, but...
We boot you out right away.
I never forget that in other bands I auditioned for, they would tell me exactly what to play, like this key or that key or this key. And with this band, I kept on wondering, but when are they going to tell me what to play? And they just started playing their songs. Nikki had a couple songs that she'd written, and I was just, you know, asked to just play my lines. And so it's pretty much been the standard for this band, is you know, because the songs sort of form themselves. And each person gets to play what they want to play, which is really amazing.
So you definitely have a unique voice, Nikki.
Thank you.
A great voice, a unique voice. So you've probably been compared to Tracy Chapman.
Of course.
How do you feel about that comparison? That was the first thing I thought.
When I started out, I played acoustically, and so I immediately got that, and I used to be like, parameter. But as you get older, you begin to unravel, and you begin to understand that a comparison does not dictate who you are as an artist. It just means that people need to put you in a slot to understand that which you are. And so it's a great compliment to be compared to her, absolutely. Take that every day.
Who are your influences, though?
For me, it is Joan Armatrading, Chrissy Hynde, and Frank Sinatra, and Lisa from the Bell Rays.
So do you find in writing, your influences are a little different from in your performing?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because writing is just like, it's the strangest thing. For me, writing songs are like little mini tiny novels, you know, that have to have a beginning and a middle and an end, and all these little things have to float around on the side. So it's not the same as, I don't know, it's just maybe, you know, writing a quick pop song. It's just, it's more involved for me. There's too many layers. And so I'm constantly bringing things to the band and saying, is this too much? And they're like, no, we think it's great. And the more we play it, the more we're like, hey, cut that part, take that. So things kind of fall away. But
so you're the primary lyricist?
I am.
Okay.
I am the lyricist.
And then you guys do, though, collaborate as a band when you're actually doing the music, right?
Absolutely. Which is cool. And they are now just coming to me with different words, and I'm like, hey, that's great.
What was that? Or what?
So you're just now coming around with, like, I have this line, I have this lyric. And absolutely, it's all.
I have yet to contribute a line. Andrew has contributed many. He practically wrote The Runaway.
No, I just had a couple poems that worked with the song, so we added them.
Andrew just kind of has this little...
This guy's the Thelonious monk of the band.
Yes.
You know what I mean? When Andy speaks, everybody shuts the hell up,
yes.
Listens,
not really.
It's important.
Not really, but... It's me, Nikki's the lyricist, Nikki's the vocalist. I don't want to sing, I want to be able to put down a good drum line, a good foundation that also is creative. So not so straight ahead rock, maybe a little straight ahead rock, a little jazz influence. My influences are like Steve Perkins from Jane's Addiction, Bill Ward from Black Sabbath, and, like Shellac, some of the harder stuff, some of the, but also some of the intricate stuff like Max Roach and Buddy Rich.
So you kind of go all over too.
Yeah, if you look at my record collection, you'll see Run DMC right next to, you know, Charles Mingus. Or right next to that is like Skinny Puppy.
Right next to Sly. Right.
And right next to that is Sly. So
little Buddy Holiday on the side. Little Big Mama Thornton bringing up the back.
I'm always super afraid to play him the songs I like.
You said your process is kind of intricate, but kind of how do you decide what to write about, or is it just something that comes to you more?
It depends. When I was younger, I used to get a lot of melodies and not a lot of words, and then somewhere it flipped to a lot of words without a melody. Now, I think honestly, because primarily I am a writer at my core, I'm just, without music, I'm just a writer, I'm a storyteller, that I can now write with, like, as an example, the last song, Anywhere, when we were in the studio and we were getting ready to do it. I remember we were working on the chalkboard and I said, give me ideas. It's lost. I hear reminiscence. And so, to now, for me, I can, if you give me a word, I can build around that and then be able to fill in the story. So, I don't know if that means I've advanced as a writer. I don't know. I can do that now.
Nikki's ambidextrous. She would drive and write, like, short novels with one hand and got the knee, like, you know, putting a sun visor down with the left hand and writing with the right hand and got the knee guiding the steering wheel.
And when the light is on, the light is on.
Sometimes that's how it goes.
I think the collaboration, why I love this, I'll never forget the first song we wrote was Lonely Hearts Chorus. And the process...
What? Should it be longer?
Should it be longer? Does that phrase pop in your mind?
Hey, I've changed. Yes, I've changed.
Now it should be shorter.
I just am a bit short.
we
had a chorus.
What is interesting for me is... what the hell was I going to say?
Never forget the first time we wrote.
The first time we wrote Lonely Hearts Chorus, all the way up till now, to me there are two distinct types of songs. There's a song that Nikki comes and says, guys, I have the song, shut up, this is how we're playing it. And there's only a little bit of improvisation and the song's done. And those are very convenient, it doesn't happen a lot. But then there are songs that... you know, we start jamming, and then to me, I find that the bass. What?
Go ahead, man. Go ahead. Tell the story.
It's audio anyway. No one can see them, so.
The bass.
Don't forget, man. Come on, say what you gotta say.
Tell me up, Bobby. No.
I'll sum up my oratorio with the following. I live comfortably in the music of the band. Sometimes, you know, the song to me is done when the music's done sometimes. Like, I'm just happy that we have our parts and we're playing. Nikki needs to associate lyrics ASAP before the song becomes a song. And no Drop Joy song is a song until Andrew commits to the drum part. Nikki and I can be going on and on and on and on. Andrew sits behind the kit and just listens and kind of plays us a 4/4 beat to humor us. But there's a special moment when he commits to the song, and that's when we realize we have a song. So there's kind of a musical and a lyrical, and then the completeness of the song. And that collaboration has produced a ton of Drop Joy songs. And I think that's why the songs are special to all of us, to the three of us.
I feel very, very honored that I get to play with two other people who completely understand what it is like to compliment the vocal. The two guys that I get to play with definitely realize there are four instruments in the band. And everybody, even myself, is like, everybody needs to just make sure the story can be told. So I'm pretty spoiled and pretty happy about that. Couldn't be better.
So how did Drop Joy actually form? Because you and Andy have played together for years. I mean,
it's been a long time with Andy.
100 years!
And then there was SGM!
So how did it go from you two in bands together and then...
Why did you want a bassist? Tell the world. Tell the world.
Nikki and I played as Nick, and we had a lot of lineups. Some were four-piece, some were five-piece, some were three-piece. And this didn't work out. And then I got sick and had to go into the hospital because I was born with a bad heart. And I had to get a heart transplant in 2003. And so all that happened in 2003. And we decided to take it all to San Diego. Nikki had moved down here. And we just never stopped working together because we've actually worked probably, Nikki and I have worked probably since 95 together.
I was only a wee babes.
It's
That's what we have.
You know, we put an ad out, and ATN came along. He brought his friend. We told him that his friend had to go because we don't want a second guitarist. I think he just left in the ambulance and went by. But we were just like, we wanted a bass player. We wanted to make it a band. And the theory was to go from Nikki, the solo artist, to a band with a band name. So much Nikki. But have Nikki write majority of the lyrics and, you know, really complete the band with a bass player. And this dude came along and auditioned in this little hot shed in La Mesa, right next to a haunted house. And then he just filled the spot. And now he's the third piece.
I'm still auditioning for the band 3 years later.
Your music collection, I think auditioning frequently is good.
Had I told him what I was into at the audition, I would have never.
You'd have booted him out right away. Arcade Fire the boot!
Now it's kind of late.
No.
So you guys are recording right now, right?
Yes. Yes, we are. And that is an arduous process. I'm sure every band can relate. You leave the studio and you're excited, you think you're done. And then you sleep and you go back the next day and you listen and you go, what's that? Did you guys hear that gremlin? What's that? And then they peel it back and then you're redoing an entire... It's taken a while. But we really want this next record to be kind of a major effort and a major push towards different areas and different arenas. You know, talking about movies and soundtracks and stuff like that. So it's got to be perfect.
So are you guys self-producing or do you have someone producing?
We have a producer, actually, who came and saw this, actually, the Spray Club, and just saw us. We got off stage and it was our CD release party back in March. And we got off stage, hot, sweaty, putting stuff away, and he was like, oh, I work with you. Okay, man, you're excited, spitting all over me, you got it, get back. So we decided to work with Blake Music, and so it's like what, a label that, deal is going to...
Was that me spitting on you?
But not that time. I think that was actually after this show.
That was in the show.
Did you see that?
I saw that. Hey. I had your sweat spray onto me. It was a very religious moment.
Was it in the mouth?
It was beautiful. Oh, did mine go into your mouth?
Come on, man. Dude, I'm angry.
I can edit that out. Ooh, Pussy Galore's coming. Nice. Next Thursday.
Yes.
This is our third album. The first two were self-produced, and this was the first album with Blatant Music that we had a producer that was super excited about our music, and it was a completely different experience. We got to record in a house. We transformed the house into a studio. So a big thing that many bands wish for, we had for a golden month in May. So we count ourselves really privileged. And so we, like Nick said, I mean, we're hoping for big things from this album.
When are you expecting to release?
I think we're looking at, I think next end of February, start of March, and then we're looking at crazy, crazy, crazy touring. Because that's, you know how that is. As soon as you drop an album, you've got to just go race out there and just play it for everybody. So
you guys did tour, actually, earlier this year.
We did.
What was that experience like for you?
It was amazing. It definitely was amazing for me.
It was consummating.
I told these guys,
ew! Ew! Edit that out. Ew!
These guys were scared at first, but I've toured before, so I told them that they have to get in the damn truck, because we went into, and we pulled up to the truck 3 deep in a Ford Ranger.
Ford Ranger. You ever see a 1994 Ford Ranger with 3 different band members' equipment and clothing?
It's not very big.
And they're sleeping in it. Yeah.
But we did it, and it came out really nice. We just met some nice people in Seattle and Oregon. And some brothers of ours that came down here. Carl Weathers Band. They had us play at their bar.
Carl Weathers Band rocks.
Carl Weathers for Governor.
Carl Weathers for Governor.
We love you guys.
They were very gracious to have us.
They put us up.
They came down here and we had them, you know, we put them up. And it was kind of like a switch off. And we met some nice people in Seattle, played some good places.
You say mesmerized.
We got to go to Whidbey Island, which is amazing. And we've actually found, believe it or not, a small cult of people that are just rabid Drop Trick fans.
Yeah, like 35 minutes from, we were like really crazy big, crazy big. 35
big
minutes from Canada.
We're very
it's
big.
It's a little island, you know.
We're big.
Where there's fucking fairy bush. We're just like, you know, the next Metallica over there.
We thought we were going to be big in Sweden first, but it turned out to be...
We'll take Whidbey Island. It's fine. They really just loved us. It was great. They put us up. They fed us. They redid their garage. It was 30 degrees. And we're coming from San Diego, so we're not used to that. So they took care of us.
Yeah, it's nothing like being the drummer throwing logs behind you into the fire so you can play the next song. You're freezing your ass out in the concrete. Like garage, but it was cool. It was all right. We came back and we played like about 10 shows. Came back to San Diego, and recorded the album as soon as we got back. All the basic tracks.
Yeah, we wrote 4 songs. Just like the night of the CD release, we debuted a couple new songs, and the next day went on tour, and those new songs became staple songs, and by the time we got back, it was like playing old Drop Joy songs, but to our local fan base, it was brand new stuff, so we have a lot of fun with that.
It's awesome.
It's all on the new record.
One question I like to ask every artist I interview, or not one, actually, there's several questions I like to ask every artist I interview, and just about their early influences. So can you just tell me, what was the first album that you bought?
I didn't actually buy an album. My sister Linda, God rest her soul, came to me and I was probably a little kid, and she said, she's a huge Rolling Stone fan. She's great. Monkey Man and all that shit was great. But she said, you have to listen to this, and it was Aerosmith, Toys in the Attic. And it just changed my life.
My first album was Fair Warning by Van Halen. I was a big Alex Van Halen fan. And then after that, I kind of like decided to go into jazz. So I just totally. The second album on vinyl was Miles Davis.
Well, mine was, I don't think they even know this. My first album was by an 80s techno guy from France. His name is Jean-Michel Jarre. And he had released an album called Rendezvous, which was inspired by the Space Shuttle Challenger crash or disaster.
Like 86 then?
Yes, 86. So that was the first album I bought. So I was deeply moved by that event. And the way... he captured that on the album, drove me nuts. So I still have that album, and I feel like crying now.
If you remember, what was the first concert you attended?
Me? Now I remember it very, very clearly. And it will probably show my age, I don't care. I went with my sister, she bought us tickets to go see Motorhead, Crocus, in New York City at the Palladium. I was very excited, I wanted to see Motorhead, didn't really care about Crocus, but the show opened with Wendy O. Williams, who, God rest her soul, was brilliant. She comes out and she just, mohawk, and woman can shit on cue. I mean, she's amazing. But the whole, I'm over to the side of the stage, and the whole time there's a guy in front of her, he's got his middle finger up. Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. She takes her great big boot, brushes him right in the head. Boom, pops his nose, blood flies everywhere. I was like, aah! So,
wow.
That was my first concert.
Your first one.
It was great.
Mine wasn't quite so violent. My first concert, I was 7 years old with my mom and my dad. And we went to go see Glenn Miller, which was the worst thing ever. And I looked at my mom and I tapped her shoulder and I said, "Hey mom, when they're gonna play rock and roll?"
Wow.
So that was my first concert.
That's a beautiful story.
That's awesome.
Again, I was culturally depraved as a part of South Africa. The only band that was willing to come out was Erasure. And so Erasure was my first show, and I loved it. Did you get that, Nick? My first show? Did you get the first show I saw?
Erasure.
Yes.
They were just here.
I know. I loved that show. I was crazy about it, so...
All right, my last question for you guys is the name Drop Joy. How'd we come up with that?
I'll start the story. I think we got together about 3 nights in a row and just got drunk. strung these words together, and we had things like Sticky Nuts, which I
Blackbird.
Just really couldn't front.
You wanted Sticky Nuts.
Sticky Nuts, not nuts.
Oh.
What the fuck is the difference? Maybe some guy had
testicle
cancer.
Well, it's singular and plural.
Maybe some guy had testicle cancer.
Either you got a sticky nut or you got sticky nuts.
I was hoping for Blackbird.
He wanted Blackbird. Blackbird was taken. So we were at a bar. 1 o'clock in the morning, and we're slinging these words together. We had things like Dropbox, Lava Rocket, I mean, just all kinds of shit. And Andy was pretty instrumental. Andy grabbed a piece of napkin, he put the drop and the joy together, and he put a line over the first O, and he put a line under the other O. And I was like, done. Okay. And we've been trying to explain its definition ever since.
And dropjoy.com was totally available.
Yep. Which is great, yeah. If you don't come by it, from some
7 letters.
Lunatic.
I challenge any band. Try to get a domain name with 7 letters.
And you know what else? If you would have had to look up Sticky Nuts.
Oh, nasty.
I'm sure it wouldn't have been great.
Nasty.
So I think you went with the right name.
Yeah, I think they are.
Alright, cool. Since we are piratepods.com, we always like to ask if you could do a pirate impression for us, or give us your favorite pirate joke, whatever you want to do.
That's you.
Nicole, it's all you.
I don't have a favorite pirate joke. The best I can do is probably, "Arrgh, matey!" That I can see.
There is time, always time, just to forecast it seems. Stay ahead, don't be led by your fortune or schemes. Splintered words fall from lips long delayed for their youth. Distant calls can be heard from a hole in the roof.